From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. This week, a deadly mass shooting in Colorado. Being American on the campaign trail, a brutal drought settles in. 12 dead and 50 wounded as a gunman opens up at the midnight premiere of Batman in Aurora, Colorado. This witness, Chris Jones, was in the theater. The gunman, he says, never had to reload.
That was a semi-automatic weapon. It wasn't stopping me. The gunman never had to reload. The shots just kept going.
More pressure on Mitt Romney to release more tax returns. His wife, Ann Romney, says they've done enough.
We've given all people need to know and understand about our financial situation and about how we live our life. That election, again, will not be decided on that.
Punishing drought now hitting crops hard. Here's U.S. Agriculture Secretary Tom Vilsack yearning for rain.
I get on my knees every day, and I'm saying an extra prayer now. If I had a rain prayer or a rain dance I could do, I would do it.
This hour On Point, our weekly news roundtable with Diane Brady of Bloomberg Businessweek, John Harwood of CNBC and the New York Times, and On Point news analyst Jack Beatty. And you can comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Joining us today from New York City is Diane Brady, senior editor for Bloomberg Businessweek. Her new book is Fraternity, about 20 black men recruited in the 1960s to Holy Cross. Diane Brady, welcome back to On Point.
Hi, Tom.
It's great to have you here with us from Washington. John Harwood, chief political correspondent for CNBC, political writer for the New York Times. John Harwood, great to have you.
Hey, Tom.
And from Hanover, New Hampshire, our own Jack Beatty. Hello, Jack.
Hello, Tom, Diane, and John.
I mean, let's just look at Colorado first for a second here. Incredible news turning on the radio this morning. 50 wounded. Now they're saying 38. Maybe it's that plus 12 is 50. I don't know. But either way, I mean, these are just terrible numbers, Jack. And it's so ghoulish at a Batman premiere and gas and endless gunfire we're hearing from that eyewitness there. No reload, all the rest. And what a death toll.
Indeed. You know, this is getting to be a socially patterned insanity. Again and again, these massacres happen. And I am just struck by the comment of Mayor Bloomberg this morning. He said, soothing words are nice, but maybe it's time that the two people who want to be president stand up and tell us what they're going to do about it. Because this is obviously a problem across the country. They want to make the world a better place. Okay, tell us how. We have a right to hear from both of them, not just in generalities. What are they going to do?
But hear what? How to soothe the soul about guns, or how to soothe the soul of some, you know, somebody who went off the deep end last night?
He's talking about the part of it that's within society's control, guns.
Diana, are we just inured to this at this point? Are we inured to it?
I don't think we're inured to it. And I think it was a very telling comment that the gunman could have that much damage and not, in fact, have to reload. I mean, there's been a lot of attention over the years to Glock and what they brought into the market. And I have to confess, I have Canadian roots, so gun control is something that does resonate with me. It clearly is a touchy issue with Americans, but if ever there's a time to talk about it, it's after a horrible incident like this.
But, John, we've talked about it before, after other horrible incidents, you know, like this. Everyone's different in its own horrible way. But here we are again. Is there any traction in Washington on this front, John?
There's not. And I wouldn't expect President Obama to, in any meaningful way, pick up the standard of this issue. It is one of those things, though, as you alluded at the top of the program, everyone can relate to. I've got teenage daughters and who've gone to these midnight premieres for hot movies. Everybody can relate to that kind of thing, and it's just about the worst story that I've ever heard.
You know, Jack, my wife and I were talking about going to Batman this weekend, and I just, now it seems, I don't know, it seems kind of like a sacrilege.
Oh, I know. You know, there's that line of Yeats's, the ceremony of innocence is drowned in blood. I mean, here's the ceremony of innocence, these young people coming to see a film, and then this man using this as the stage of his to enact this mad right. I mean, as I say, this keeps happening, and we do keep coming to the point where we're saying we're going to talk about it. We were going to talk about it after Columbine. We were going to talk about it after Gabby Giffords. We talk about it, and nothing changes.
You know, there's some almost weird merger with the pathos of the screen here, Diane. I mean, you know, this choice to do it in this setting with all the dark Batman stuff going on the screen, and then the guy kind of stepping right out in the real world and pushing the line.
You know, it is. It's horrible premeditation. You can imagine the fear people were feeling in the theater. And what's always been remarkable about the U.S. is how open our society is. Anybody who's been to a lot of other countries in the world, I remember Northern Ireland in the 70s, mm-hmm. That you would routinely go through screen detectors. There'd be, people stationed at malls. That's not the kind of society we generally want. And I take some issue with Jack's comment. This sort of thing doesn't happen that often, which is why it's so remarkable. The whole nation is horrified because it's unusual. It's incredibly ghoulish. And I think it's not the sort of thing that will be repeated anytime soon.
Well, yet there is the drumbeat. I mean, we can all kind of cite the examples of this, and they do come back and they don't go away. Let's hear from our listeners, Steve in Newington, Connecticut. Steve, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call. I just think at this point, I don't understand why we're surprised anymore. I think we should be treating these things almost like the weather report. It's unbelievable, but yet they are believable. And I think we should be saying something direct to the NRA and asking the NRA, what are they going to do about this at this point?
Well, but you know what the NRA will do about it. I mean, but a weather report? I mean, John Harwood, what was it? Mark Twain said, everybody complains about the weather, but nobody does anything about it. Is this really just, it'll come. It'll come in its waves. It'll come in its time, and we just have to take it?
You know, I think the balance of forces politically is such in this country that just like stalemates that exist on other issues, the issue of gun control and what to do about gun violence is so difficult for one side to overpower the other that I think you have events like this, people talk about it, people sort of ruminate over whether or not it is going to, in fact, shift that balance, and it just doesn't. Things fade, memories fade quickly, the society moves on to other issues, and so things that we think would provoke some sort of national dialogue that would fundamentally change things, those things fade rather fast.
We've got a lot to talk about here, but listeners are on this. Bill Waterbury, Connecticut, you're on, Bill.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
I just wanted to make a comment about the emphasis on it being a semi-automatic weapon. And this atrocity could have happened with a weapon that's not semi-automatic. It could have happened with a pipe bomb. There's many other things.
Are you sticking up for high volume weaponry in and among us, Bill? Is that what are you defending it? Is that the idea?
Well, yes, I am.
Why? What for? I'm just curious. Why?
Well, because it's just another thing for the government to try to take away our Second Amendment. Now, if this happened with a hatchet or something, they wouldn't be talking about, it's being such an atrocity, and they wouldn't be emphasizing on it like they are.
Hard to get a hold of 60 people with a hatchet in one go, and I don't know, and I don't know exactly what the weaponry was, Bill. But why do we need semi-automatic weapons walking around our streets into our theaters? Why do we need that, Bill?
Well, we don't need anything like that walking into a theater. My point basically is this could have happened with a different type of weapon. It could have happened with a pipe bomb. The media is going to emphasis on it being a semi-automatic weapon now, so the public is up in arms because it was a semi-automatic weapon, and everybody is going to want to go for taking away the Second Amendment. Now,
well, we'll see exactly what kind of weapons it was. In all honesty, I don't know at this point. We heard what that witness said, but a lot's still being nailed down. One more on this, Eben in Patton, Vermont. Eben, you're on the air.
Hi, thank you. This gets to the point of the Second Amendment right there, that can we have as a country finally a dialogue that is saying the Second Amendment is basically safe. No one wants to take it away, but does that mean that we can own any kind of weapon we want? I'm not sure I understand how a Second Amendment right gives someone the right to own any kind of assault rifle or semi-automatic that they want.
Well, that's the way the courts have laid it out, but let us look at it, Diane Brady. Have we ended up putting our own Constitution in extremist terms here? You got the Canadian background. How's it look to you?
Well, I think I do think these are real issues. You can't drive, you know, some of these Formula One race cars on city streets for good reason, which is that, you know, when you look at when some of these weapons were introduced into the market, the carnage that can result, there have to be limits. The other thing I would say is one of the benefits right now of the technology, the security apparatus we have, is we're far better able to track unusual purchases, who's buying these things. After Timothy McVeigh, obviously, we took a closer look at even fertilizer sales. So,
but we don't track a lot of this. I mean, we've looked in Arizona recently, you know, at the whole Fast and Furious thing, and it was shocking how crude and old-fashioned and based on paper and slow the tracking often is.
I think you have to sort of get up to the 21st century with technology and tracking. And more importantly, we have to have a real discussion around the impact of these kinds of weapons. Could it have happened with others? Of course. But the reality is that the numbers you've seen in recent years, you often look back and it's tracked to a certain type of weaponry in the hands of the wrong people.
Here we are in our American gridlock on weapons. Different views. And now, another example of high number deaths. 12, we're told at this point, dead in Colorado, 38 more wounded. That's a lot. That's a lot in a short time. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're looking at a week in the news, a killer in Colorado, deepening drought in so much of the country now, assassination in Damascus, right in the heart of the Assad regime, Mitt Romney's taxes, Obama and the American way, criticism and attacks there. John, if you would, help set up this kind of long-distance debate that we saw this week between the president talking about how success is made in America and Mitt Romney talking about how success is made in America. I'm going to play a long clip from each. But the way the media seems to have framed it up, and maybe they're framing it up, John, is two starkly different visions of the way America works. Have they got it? Is that true?
They are different visions of the way America works that in practice, in governance, I believe would be much narrower than the philosophic difference suggests. But they're being used by both sides to try to reflect something fundamental or make a point about policy agendas. President Obama is trying to say that we're all in this together as part of an argument for why people who make a lot of money in this country ought to pay higher taxes. Mitt Romney's trying to make, as the right has portrayed the president over the last couple of years, as somebody fundamentally hostile to private enterprise. That is not supported by President Obama's record. However, it's something that is widely believed on the right, and Mitt Romney's trying to fire up his base and persuade some people who wonder about the president's economic vision for the future, trying to reach them and persuade them that he would be a safer choice to revive the economy.
Well, these are big ideas or maybe caricatures the way we end up seeing them or the way they end up batted around on the campaign trail. Been a lot of sound bites flying around on these fronts this week. Let's sit back and listen for a minute here to President Obama and then to Mitt Romney. The president first. This was in Roanoke, Virginia. It's a week ago now, but it's worked out through this week's news cycle. There's this conversation, the president saying that business owners couldn't take sole credit for their success.
If you've been successful, you didn't get there on your own. You didn't get there on your own. I'm always struck by people who think, well, it must be because I was just so smart. There are a lot of smart people out there. It must be because I worked harder than everybody else. Let me tell you something. There are a whole bunch of hardworking people out there. If you were successful, somebody along the line gave you some help. There was a great teacher somewhere in your life. Somebody helped to create this unbelievable American system that we had that allowed you to thrive. Somebody invested in roads and bridges. If you got a business, that you didn't build that. Somebody else made that happen. The internet didn't get invented on its own. Government research created the internet, so then all the companies could make money off the internet. The point is that when we succeed, we succeed because of our individual initiative, but also because We do things together.
President Obama there in Roanoke, Virginia, and boy, has a lot come out of that. And the line that has been pulled straight up out of it, if you've got a business, you didn't build that. Somebody else made that happen. We'll talk about the syntax and what he's referring to there. But here's how Mitt Romney began to distill it down and feed it back at the president. This was in Irwin, Pennsylvania on Tuesday, said that all this was an insult to American innovators and entrepreneurs.
The idea to say that Steve Jobs didn't build Apple, that Henry Ford didn't build Ford Motor, that Papa John didn't build Papa John Pizza, that Ray Kroc didn't build McDonald's, that Bill Gates didn't build Microsoft. You go on the list, that Joe and his colleagues didn't build this enterprise. To say something like that is not just foolishness, it's insulting to every entrepreneur, every innovator in America, and it's wrong.
And it's wrong, said Mitt Romney. Diane Brady, you're at Business Week. What do you hear in this exchange?
Well, it's interesting because I do think vilifying the rich is not a sustainable strategy in American culture. At the same time, the point that Obama was trying to make is a valid one, which is the playing field, making it fair, the infrastructure around people. I mean, it's true. If you look through history, there's a reason why people born in a certain era tend to do well. But the reality is that one line, I think, really felled him, because people do build businesses. We love the Horatio Alger story. What he has to get at is the idea that, you know, all the tools that these people use are tools that we as a society have to maintain, have to build. That got lost in the rhetoric, and I think Romney jumped on it very effectively.
Jumped on it hard. Carissa is calling from Burlington, Vermont. Carissa, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Yeah, thanks, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
I have a brief point to make, and that is, it is so interesting when you listen to these two men's words and then you look at their life histories. Obama, in my view, is the embodiment of the American dream. He really bootstrapped himself up. You know, Romney is all about the individual creating this opportunity for yourself. Obama was the man who did that, whereas you look at Romney, and he was really fortunate in terms of family and, where he came from. And so I think that just looking at the contrast between those two, and yet the rhetoric that is coming out of each camp is just it's really striking. And I think for Romney to believe that we are all individuals like in this by ourselves, I think that's just such a complete fallacy. And that's something that our American, our culture and our structure has allowed to happen.
But Carissa, don't we need to applaud and admire those who do build on top of what we put together as a community, who do, you know, Steve Jobs and the others who do that innovation? Don't they still deserve some credit?
As one of your other commenters said, this never happens in a vacuum. We all need each other. We're all in it together. The New York Times had a great column the other day stating that the myth of individual freedom and liberty, that's something that's a social construct. I mean, it's really nice to think that we are individual actors and we are solely responsible for our success, but that is absolutely not the case. And I think Romney is completely wrong on that.
Carissa, I appreciate your call. I mean, Jack Beatty, at the same time, you know, it wasn't entirely clear. The president was not artful in the way he put this together. Whether he was saying, when he said somebody else made that happen, is he talking about building a business? Is he talking about building roads and bridges? Those are two different things. And then he's kind of playing the line, isn't he, Jack? Somebody worked smart and hard when a business gets built, even on top of all that communal investment, Jack.
But let's just go back for a second. This was partly manufactured by Fox News. This has been reported. They did 42 segments on this, starting his speech, most of them right there. And not
if you've
looking,
got a business, you didn't build
yeah,
that. Somebody else
and,
made that
you know,
happen.
Yes, he said it inartfully, but it's clear he's talking about the infrastructure. He's talking about the teachers. He's talking about the social capital behind everything we do in America. However, he's getting right at the limits of our political culture. It is the fact, and some of us would regret it, that at least in theory, in what we think about the world, we're still under the spell of American individualism, which has great strengths. But one of its weaknesses is it tends to blur the degree to which we are, in fact, dependent upon each other. And the reason it does that is that we're not dependent upon each other in some communal way. it's something else comes between the state. And Americans just don't settle with that. I mean, they just don't like the idea of, and they don't even see the state in those terms. Franklin Roosevelt could talk about it that way in the 30s when the state was nurturing actively. But it's right at the limit of what's acceptable in American culture, political culture. And Elizabeth Warren got at this a year ago, or whenever it was, when she essentially pioneered this trope, you know, you didn't do it yourself. Why push at something that is so basic for just to say something as unexceptional as we need infrastructure, we need teachers, we need, but why go out of your way to make this, point about government? All I'm saying is it's a very risky thing in our political culture.
John, I found it very interesting coming from Mitt Romney, this sort of super emphasis on individualism coming out of the Mormon community, which you talk about community support, talk about communities working together. I mean, Mormons really support one another. It's part and parcel of what they do as a faith community. But yet when it comes to economics here, Mitt Romney saying, you know, really super celebrating the individual in this last week.
Exactly. And this is why I say that I think in actual reality, the difference between these two men, how they would govern, how they think about the world, is not as great as the campaign dialogue forces them to appear to be. Mitt Romney is seizing on this for a particular reason, because it plays into, as Jack was suggesting, and people on the right, Fox News and other people, like to think of President Obama as somebody who is fundamentally at odds with the private enterprise system. On the other hand, President Obama is trying to make a point about tax policy, which is an arguable point. Whether or not we need tax increases right now is a function of economic conditions and what we want to do about the deficit. And he was clearly playing to the crowd with his riff. That's why he took the risk that Jack mentioned. Mm-hmm. You could tell from that clip that you played, the crowd liked it a lot. He was basically saying, sort of making a, you and I are in this together, and some of those people making the argument they didn't do it on their own. And the crowd was warming to that. But, that's politics. And as you mentioned, the caricature is what rules both in the political advertising and in the campaign dialogue.
And, of course, it depends on the crowd. Diane, sorry.
Yeah, I think that something has changed. I've always been struck that we put up with a lot as Americans, as long as we feel the playing field is fair. You know, we take less vacation, we work harder, we don't mind, we love rich people. And I think the last few years has really exacerbated the sense that it's not fair. And I think that's what Obama is successfully, to some extent, playing to, the idea that the income gap is growing, that you can work hard and still not get ahead. That's a reality we have to face. And I think that Romney probably ignores it at his peril, that there is a big chunk of this society that has not done well. And it's not just the lower class, it is the middle class, and it's people who traditionally have been very optimistic about their futures.
Maybe here's the deafness on the other side, because they have gone very hard at it. President Obama may not have been artful, but then there was a former New Hampshire governor and Romney surrogate John Sununu, who said not only does the president not understand private enterprise, he's suggesting, individualism, he needs to learn how to be an American. He came back and apologized, but he came out swinging in a conference call here.
The men and women all over America who have worked hard to build these businesses, their businesses, from the ground up, is how our economy became the envy of the world. It is the American way. And I wish this president would learn how to be an American.
Wish he'd learn how to be an American. We've got listeners who are resonating with that. Greg writes, after this last outburst by President Obama, expect him to be back on the prompter, the teleprompter. He's up there telling folks their hard work means nothing, and at the same time telling others they are entitled. It's crazy, writes this listener. Michael in Boston, you're on the air, Michael.
Yes, hi, Tom. I find that it's so obvious that both of these candidates are just trying to reach their strength as far as reach the groups that give them strength.
Sure.
Pure politics. I actually called about the incident at the theater, but I was told that you weren't taking any more calls, and I did want to just say one thing. I think that if we look at these individuals that do these horrendous acts, look at their history and try to find out, you know, it isn't a single thing. They've gone through and they've been with mental health professionals probably all their lives. And why haven't these professionals, I'm not saying that they need to be held accountable, why haven't these professionals seen something in this individual?
Michael, you may be right. I'm going to let that one go right now because we just don't know yet. We don't even have a name here. Just maybe somebody who's 25 or 26 years old. And as far as I know at this moment, that's all we've got. One more, Nashville. David, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
The point is that there are many people with talent. And there are many people in the entertainment industry. There are many people who are born into different walks of life. And the point is you've got many famous inventors throughout the years and throughout centuries who've made major impact on society and industry, and they've never gotten anything or gone anywhere. It's the luck of the draw. It's where you're born. It's where you are at a given time. And that's what makes the difference. Yes, there are people who work hard, who try all their lives to produce and to get ahead. But you know what? Many of them don't get anywhere because they weren't born with a silver spoon in their mouth.
David, we've got it, and our time is short, but let me take it right there. Jack Beatty, I mean, you can see these. It is really highlighted, these two different perspectives. There's David, you know, it's silver spoon, it's luck of the draw. And on the other side, Americans who do not want to let go and feel it's integral to the success of this country that we see personal initiative and effort and drive firing up that economy everybody wants fired up. And then here comes John Sununu. I mean, all the way to, I wish this president would learn how to be an American.
Yeah, I mean, John Sununu, I mean, a disgraced former chief of staff who had to leave office because he was taking Air Force planes to his dentist and his skiing trips and so on. And he comes out and makes this sort of statement. He did walk it back, but that's stroking the Obama as the other narrative, which is part of this Obama as the statist, as the socialist. And I think that the president, again, this is just a matter of prudence. I think he's got to watch the way he puts these things.
And no kidding. Hey, Jack, forgive me. Let me get one more call before the break. Forgive me. Sarah in Belmont, Massachusetts. Sarah, you're on the air.
Hi. I just wanted to point out that if Steve Jobs had been born in his father's native Syria, he probably wouldn't have been who he became because he was raised in California and he was in this atmosphere where all these high-tech companies were there I cannot imagine that if he had grown up in Syria, he could have done the same thing because it would have been a totally different environment.
Well, a very fair point. Sarah, I appreciate that. I got it. Diane, I mean, Sarah kind of supports David in Nashville. Things do matter. It matters if you're born in the country.
He was also born in 1955, as were Bill Gates and most of the other big entrepreneurs of that era, and had the right parents. But at the end of the day, others were born in 55. They did not do what Steve Jobs and Bill Gates did. And I think that you have to celebrate success while you're also talking about the conditions for it.
Absolutely. And not forget all the research and the effort of this nation that went into building the platform that those great companies were built on with a whole lot of sweat. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. In other news this week, 5 Israelis killed in a bus bombing in Bulgaria. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu went hard on Iran for the deaths.
This attack was part of a global campaign of terror carried out by Iran and Hezbollah. This terror campaign has reached a dozen countries on 5 continents.
Basketball sensation Jeremy Lin of Lin Sanity gets $25 million and heads to Houston. New York fan Patrick Edwards, playing pickup ball with a Jeremy Lin t-shirt, said it's a big mistake.
It makes no sense. He was doing good over there. He got his name at New York. And all of a sudden, he gets his fame and now he getting traded. It's a terrible mistake.
And Google star Melissa Meyer is in as the new CEO of Yahoo. Pregnant too. Earlier this year, she said she likes challenges.
You know, that feeling at the end of the day where you're like, what have I gotten myself into? And I realized that sometimes when you have that feeling and you push through it, something really great happens.
Well, and there she is. We'll see what she can do with Yahoo. We're looking at a week in the news. One more call on the American Way. Tony in West Palm Beach, Florida. Tony, you're on.
Hi, Tom. Just wanted to comment on Romney's assault, lashing out at Steve Jobs. It's so unfortunate that he forgot that Microsoft invested $150 million in Apple Computer back in 1997. And as a result of this, Apple was enabled to revive itself. That stock today would be worth about
$10. Tony, you're breaking up on us, but I'm not sure there. But maybe one thing builds on another. That's quite clear. Here's one more comment from the web. Nav says, let's be clear. He says, I didn't hear the president vilify entrepreneurs. He simply said that no one builds a business by themselves, that they have help. And the reward for that is the profits and a responsibility to give back to the community at large when you're fortunate enough to have this opportunity. Well, there we go. Taxes and tax returns. John Harwood, lots of Obama pressure on this this week. We heard Ann Romney at the top. Did she say we've shown you all you people need to see? I'm not sure, but why the Republican pressure for more tax returns from Governor Romney?
I think Republicans want to get the conversation back to the weakness in the economy, which becomes more evident by the day. My friends at ABC who conducted that interview with Ann Romney concluded that she did not say you people.
Okay, it almost sounded, I mean, it was a little pause or something there. Yeah.
Right. But in any case, it wouldn't insult me as a member of the press if she referred to us as you people. But the point is, Mitt Romney and Ann Romney seem determined not to go there. He has had every opportunity over several years. He's been running for president for quite a long time, mm-hmm. to put this information out there. He doesn't want to do it, just as he doesn't want to release more information that he's been asked to release about Bain Capital. Could that change if the pressure gets great enough? Yes, it could change. But as of this moment, I think they assume that that they're not going to have to. And one of the things that a campaign waits for when they're under pressure of this kind is something to alter the news environment and change the storyline that's been dominant. This event in Colorado certainly has nothing to do with the presidential campaign, but it does shake up the news environment, and maybe Mitt Romney, once this passes, will be able to move on to more fertile territory for him.
But we've got a lot of people saying, well, he gave 23 years to John McCain when he was being considered for the vice presidency, and he's saying he'll do 2 years, but that second year isn't out there yet, and who knows how late in the cycle it'll be. Here's Jack, I'll come to you. Here's George Wilfirst, a conservative columnist on ABC News This Week.
If something's going to come out, get it out in a hurry. I do not know why, given that Mr. Romney knew the day that McCain lost in 2008 that he was going to run for president again, that he didn't get all of this out and tidy up some of his offshore accounts and all the rest. He's done nothing illegal, nothing unseemly, nothing improper, but lots that's impolitic.
Jack Beatty, nothing unseemly here, but you know, if you're going to run for president, well, just tidy up your offshore accounts, my good man. For heaven's sake, tie your shoes.
Yes, you know, elite opinion with one voice has been saying this for the last week. But a Romney aide was quoted as saying, there's no evidence that voters care about this. And last week, you would have predicted with this storm of comment from conservative commentators especially, that this would hurt Governor Romney in the polls. What's happened this week? His lead, President Obama's lead in June in Virginia, wiped out. His lead in the swing states as a whole, wiped out. The economy swamping this talk about Mr. Romney's taxes. How many people think the economy is improving? It's dropped from 33 in April to 24 now.
Percent, yeah. Wow.
Yeah, I mean, these are the big things that, I mean, people's, you know, opinion leaders, their reference group is George Will. For voters, it's their cousin, it's their brother, it's somebody down the street who's lost a job or who's on short wages, and that's their idea of what's important in this campaign, stuff about
maybe you're
tax
right.
Returns.
Maybe you're right, unless it, you know, I mean, here John Sununu goes after how American is the president. If there can be some, you know, if people sense something deeper, I don't know, disloyalty in foreign accounts. I don't know, Bill in Iowa City, Iowa. Bill, you're on the air.
Yes, Willard has a history of
being on the shady line of taxes. He was on the Marriott Tax Audit Committee, head of the audit committee.
Who are we talking about here, Bill? Are you talking about Mitt Romney?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And there's something toxic about the 2009 returns. And, of course, he couldn't do 7 and 8 without doing 9. And 2009 is when the Swiss amnesty came on.
Tax amnesty for Americans who declared what was there if they hadn't done it before. But do you really think Mitt Romney would have been illegally pushing stuff over there, big, prominent public guy with so much money? I mean, you know, the rules have been pretty wide open. You don't have to break the law, as George Will says.
But it's, he's been on the shadow side of the line, and something's toxic about 2009. And I would ask him specific questions about 2009. You know, his spokesman said, no, there have not been any years where he didn't pay any taxes. So they're willing to answer some questions. And it was totally disgusting for him to put his wife out there yesterday with no answers.
Well, never mind you people on that. No, not you, John. Tom in Columbia, South Carolina. Tom, you're on.
Hello, Tom. Prior caller just got kind of what I was going to say, which is the Swiss amnesty. He has, we know from the 210, a UBS bank account, or has one. But he's really not even released 2010 yet, because there's a form that you attach specifying for your foreign bank account. That's not out there. That might show something on what's going up UBS. And that's where the tax amnesty really came in, was from the whistleblower at UBS. And so is he in the IRS tax program amnesty? It's an anonymous system, but maybe that extra form for 2010. But until then, he has not yet released the full tax return.
Hey, Tom, maybe none of this matters. Maybe it just matters if people can afford their supermarket bill and if they have a job or not. Maybe this is a tempest in a teapot.
Character does matter, though. And if you have to get into the IRS amnesty program to avoid huge penalties. You pay your tax, but you still avoided penalties. Otherwise, you can be penalized. I'm not going to say it's, whether it's criminal or not, but, you know, avoiding taxes, that's generally a crime.
Tom, we got it. Diane Brady, I mean, you're there at Business Week. How do you look at all this? Does it smell funky, or this is just politics, and it's, how do you see it?
I think it should be standard operating procedure if you're going to run for president. Then, you know, your tax records are fair game. And I don't know if it will be. I'm with Jack. I don't think most Americans ultimately are going to care about the minutiae so much. They understand Mitt Romney does not pay as high a tax as many Americans. They get it. They get who Mitt Romney is. But the reality is, not to release it, to be hedging, that does get to the character issue. That is something that is important. People just say, look, you want to be president, just do it and do it now.
Here's Romney himself. This was Fox News on Monday saying, no way, it's going to be 2 years and that's it.
John McCain ran for president and released 2 years of tax returns. John Kerry ran for president. You know, his wife, who has hundreds of millions of dollars, she never released her tax returns. Right. Somehow this wasn't an issue. The Obama people keep on wanting more and more and more, more things to pick through, more things for their opposition research to try and make a mountain out of, and to distort and to be dishonest about.
Does it float away, John Harwood, or does it get banged on all the way through to the election day?
Well, I think Democrats will bang on it as long as they think they can make some headway. And some of the evidence that we have seen from polling in swing states, I heard what Jack said about how static the national polls are, and they are considerably static. But in our NBC Wall Street Journal poll, we showed our most recent one that Romney had taken on some water with respect to his reputation as a businessman and in the swing states that we looked at, the swing state sample. So, yes, I think Democrats are going to keep going on this, both the tax return issue and, importantly, the issue of where money is, that is, and where jobs go, the offshoring, the outsourcing. You have this very effective ad that Democrats are running now with Mitt Romney singing America the Beautiful, mm-hmm. while video rolls showing he had money in a Swiss bank account, he had money in the Cayman Islands. Democrats believe that a cardinal sin for voters in today's economy is if you are complicit in the offshoring or the cutting of American jobs, and Democrats are going to try to pin that on him because President Obama's got on his shoulders responsibility for the entire economy. Republicans are going to keep pounding on that, too.
It does seem funny when there's that much money. I don't know. It seems like a people ought to be able to understand something more maybe about a would-be president's interest. Christine in Lexington, South Carolina. Christine, you're on the air.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. It's an interesting conversation. I have a comment. We keep hearing about this bad economy, and I think a lot of it is being hyperinflated by the rhetoric that's going on in the campaign. For instance...
Well, what's hyperinflated about 8.2% unemployment and the millions? I mean, that's real, isn't it?
Okay, well, it is real, and there's a reason for that. When we did have this massive recession due to overspending on wars and such without increasing taxes, instead we decreased them, we got ourselves into a funk. Companies cut back, and they learned to be very efficient. And if you look at the stock market, which as a retiree, I depend on my income from savings that I worked hard for 30 years, you look at the stock market, and it's company after company making fantastic profits. But it's not being transferred over to the workers. They're being paid lower wages, less hours, and companies are so efficient now they're not hiring.
Yeah.
So they're making these enormous profits. Now, good for them, but don't use it as a political tool against our incumbent, because this is a making of the happenings that have occurred over these past 5, 6, 7 years.
Christine, we've got it. I mean, people are smart and people watch and they see how things sort out. Steve in Des Moines, Iowa. Steve, you're on the air.
Yes, Tom. I am a small businessman. I guess you could call me one of those people that a lot of people would say would normally be a Republican. And I've started my business in 1984. I have 20 employees. The benefits that the businesses are getting do not reach down to me. They talk about small businesses and all these benefits. Not down this far, they don't. Plus, my business is very dependent on the middle class. Educated middle-class people are the ones who participate in the activities that I promote and provide product for. And if we don't have a middle class, my business can't grow. I cannot live on rich people.
So let's educate ourselves and let's have a middle class. Hey, Steve, do you see the drought out there? We're hearing so much talk about it. Is it big talk in Iowa?
I did my best. Back in the 90s, gradually our business has flattened out. It's not growing anymore. I'm holding my own, but it's not growing anymore. But it hasn't been growing since 2002. I've got to make the business grow. I want to be able to pay my employees more. It's the same thing as this $250,000 income thing. You know, all I've got to do is take some of that money and give somebody a job, and then I don't have to worry about paying taxes on $250,000.
Hey, Steve, we've got it. I appreciate your call. Thinking about drought here as well, the reports are so rough. We did a big story on it this week. If you missed it, listeners, check it out at our website, onpointradio.org. Diane, what about the effect of this drought? We will have already having a debate over what's caused it, whether, you know, this is just cyclical or we've got climate change pounding us on yet another front here. What about down the road for consumers and prices and inflation, Diane?
Well, I think that's a real issue. And when you look at the trends over the past several decades, yes, you know, these things do boom and bust, the 50s, the late 70s. But the reality is this is about as bad as many people have ever seen. And food prices we've seen in other parts of the world have been a huge factor politically in how people react. We're not going to have food riots here, but higher prices, I think, really do hurt people, especially right now. And I think it could be a factor in the election. But more importantly, I think it's a factor in how people are thinking about climate change, and it may actually spur some action, hopefully, on things like carbon caps and all these other issues that have been pushed aside amid the recession.
Thinking today as Ramadan begins about this, we've just got a minute here, but we saw a group of Republicans, Michelle Bachmann and others, calling for the State Department's Deputy Inspector General to investigate whether Hillary Clinton's top aide, this is Huma Abedin, and other State Department officials were trying to influence U.S. foreign policy to aid the Muslim Brotherhood and other Islamist causes. That got Senator John McCain's attention. He took to the floor of the Senate Wednesday and denounced those accusations.
These allegations about Huma Abedin and the report from which they are drawn are nothing less than an unwarranted and unfounded attack on an honorable citizen a dedicated American, and a loyal public servant.
John Harwood, is there some undercurrent in Washington now looking even at Muslim Americans in such high public service?
Among kooky people, there is. And that's where this comes from. John McCain did the right thing in going to the Senate and denouncing it as ridiculous. And there's been a lot of Republicans, including the Speaker, John Boehner, rallying around the point that John McCain was making. So I do think this is limited to the kooky fringe.
Hey, you're showing up in some of these campaign ads now, John. You're in one of Karl Rove's, the Crossroads GPS ads, saying bad economy.
Seconds worth. You know, these ad makers more and more are ripping pieces of video footage from the news. It's easy to make, and it provides some credibility that politicians don't have any longer.
And suddenly a journalist right in the middle, through no intent of your own. I don't know. We'll talk one day about how you feel about that. It's great to have all three of you with us today. John Harwood with CNBC and the New York Times. Thank you for being here, John.
Thanks, Tom.
Diane Brady with Bloomberg Businessweek. You're terrific. Thank you, Diane.
Always a pleasure, Tom. Thanks.
Jack Beatty, have a great weekend, my friend.
Thank you.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
On Point is a production of WBUR Boston and NPR.